like in school, we focused on glorifying the empire and the notion of great, great Britain. And it's like, until we kind of dismantle that, and like, you can't, a country can't progress unless it analyzes it where it's failed. And I'm guessing, like, with this type of stuff, until we can have like an honest discourse with ourselves and unpack what the empire really did and have intellectual debates about it, like, how can we really progress? Like, this is the same country that enslaved like thousands of people, but then are shocked that we'll elect a person who calls Muslim women letterboxes and calls us pickaninnies with watermelon smiles. It's like, what the fuck do you think would happen?
Yeah, it's so true. It's like, it's difficult to unpack because we always get like the fake outrage. We get the people who are real quick to make a cute looking Instagram post about how outrageous this one instance is. And how, like, a whole system needs to be. It's very convenient for people to pick that one inconvenient. Inconvenience is the word, because it's, to a lot of people, it isn't. It, they don't give it the weight of the generations and the centuries of damage that it's done. So to some people, it's like that one inconvenience which can be righted by just like spouting out all of this. Like, oh yeah, it's wrong, or in those times it was so bad, or I can't believe that was a thing. Like, and to people, what I'm seeing a lot is people using that as like, oh yeah, that's enough to appease, that's enough to balance the scales. Like, me posting that thing and me going, yeah, we should do that thing one time. Oh yeah, we should acknowledge those 10 brown people from the 60s that we always do. Like, yeah, that's enough. Like, and it's, and then something else happens, and then something else happens, and if something isn't happening now, a light is being shed on something that has happened. This week, I have learned, out of just clicking, it feels like, you know when you're a child and you're like, you open the wrong drawer, and you walk into a room where you're like, oh no, your parents didn't say do that, and you're looking for Christmas presents and you see something. Like, it feels like I've just been clicking, and because so much is available, I've accidentally happened upon some wild stuff because we're just sat at home on the internet. Like, I'll give you two examples. Just yesterday, I saw a video from an American man who upholsters old furniture, like vintage furniture. People take their old furniture that they have to get reupholstered, renovated, wood sanded down and varnished. And there was a black man in America. He took the cover off the chair and he said, oh, the owners of this chair tell me it's around 200 years old. So the wood is great, so I'm just going to sand and varnish that. And then I took the cover off to look at the filling, because it's like, one thing I do is just restuff the chair, so it's just fuller. And the filling was black people's hair.
What?
The filling of the... I'll find this video and send it to you. He opened this chair and he was like, this is human hair. This is black, curly human hair that's filling this chair. It's like, he zooms out and it's a big rocking chair, armchair. And he's like, imagine how many... 200 years ago, how many slaves had to go through a horrible experience to stuff this person's chair? And my brain was like, this is so fucked. And people go, I know what we'll do. We'll write a post and like do a little petition here and we'll tell people to stop being bad. And it's like, there's no... What would you put on the other side of a scale when it's weighed down by things like that?
Exactly, it's mad. Like, it just baffles me, like, the blissful ignorance we live in, and kind of like that, like, having to contextualize, having that moment, being able to contextualize the struggle, realizing that there's black hair that's been used to stuff something for like a white person's convenience. And it's like, we're not really taught about that. There's not much discussion that goes on about those types of things. Like, one thing that came across in the conversations about like schools was how we always have like the same examples of like Martin Luther King or like Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm a conspiracy theorist to a degree, in the sense of, I think that we're taught certain people because they had messages that were aligned with almost like not subservience, but compliance. Like,
yes.
Martin Luther King was very compliant in the sense of, you know, we're gonna get for free, we're gonna fight for freedom, but then yeah. also, you know, let's maybe not break too many laws, or maybe let's ask for freedom. Whereas like we shy away from heroes like Malcolm X, who was like, nah, don't ask, take. Like, freedom is taken, not given. Like,
yeah.
And I think that part of that, like, shying away, it's particularly done here, because it's very interesting how, like, throughout school, we contextualize the black struggle to America. We never really talk about the stuff that was going on here. We never talk about, like, the no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. We never talk about, like, the atrocities that have happened. Like, people think things like Grenfell have happened recently are like odd occasions.
Yeah.
Where you have like the New Cross Massacre and things like that, where a couple, I think it was like 13 or 14 black kids died, and the Prime Minister at the time, who I believe was Margaret Thatcher, refused to go. Like, and it just baffles me that, I don't know, like, ignorance allows people to ignore what's going on the doorstep, but it's not like ignorance, and I don't believe it's ignorance in the sense of I'm not aware. I think it's elective ignorance, because yeah. that issue doesn't affect me, so I'm not going to try and give any sort of emotional empathy to the groups that do feel that.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, that makes perfect sense, because, like, I feel like I agree with you where it reaches a stage where it feels like it sounds conspiracy-ish, because what people go is common sense wouldn't allow a society of people to explicitly choose to act that certain way, especially towards another group of people. But like your examples you've used there are so textbook that so many people, when they spout about what they know about civil rights movement, is instantly they think Martin Luther King walking arm in arm with people asking for peace. They think of the I Have a Dream speech. So even like staying in America and staying at that era, Fred Hampton, 21 years old when he was killed, because he was more than just a voice. Like, little things like that. And moving that same idea over to the UK and currently. So Fred Hampton was 21. They said he was a Black Panther leader. Killed him in his sleep, in his bedroom. Said he fired, obviously conspiracies spin from that moment. But again, that's a 21-year-old person. Like, that's nuts to me that a 21-year-old was so threatening to an entire country's comfort in oppression that they killed him and everyone else in that room. I think one person survived from that house. Looking now and, like, reflecting in the UK, again, because I've been clicking around and seeing what's happening, I assume you saw that the video and that the uproar of that child being assaulted in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, so from that and some of the people and pages that I follow around London, there is a group and a collective of people called Forever Family UK.
Oh yeah, they've been escorting kids.
They're, like, what they've been doing is amazing. What I can see happening, so textbook, is exactly what happens to any other group of people that attempt to protect ourselves from a system that isn't trying to protect or help us in any way. So they've been sharing really openly other people raising loads of concerns around different boroughs of London. So they've been like, this isn't an isolated incident. It's just whenever we try and escalate it, we're told it's isolated or it just happens in your community, which is the same rhetoric that they use to validate stop and searches, the same rhetoric they use to stereotype people. The same, we've seen infinite videos of young black guys sat in nice cars and being asked, what are you doing here and whose car is this? Or is this your car? Or the sarcastic, oh, that's a nice car. Because we know the end of that sentence is, that's a nice car for a black man. What is the black man doing here? What is, like, all, we know how those sentences end. Organizations like that very quickly become a target, because what they're doing is going, we don't need, if you're not going to help us, we will help ourselves. And if you actively don't help us, so like if by actively it means like if the police willfully ignore people reporting crimes, if they give the excuse we're too busy or there's other things going on, which they do to a lot of these crimes, or there wasn't enough evidence to pursue, these organisations are doing this thing where they're calling rideouts and pulling up at people's houses and they're accosting people in the street. They're doing all of those things. And then a few days ago, one of the guys was walking through a park with his kids recording, and he turned around and there were 5 undercover policemen following him. And he went, this is exactly what I knew was happening. He's like, they're either far right or they're policemen, and it's hilarious that they're one or the other.
It's mad. we can see how this happens, like all over and over and over, as you said, the patterns throughout history. And it always happens when we try to organize and take control of what's going on within our own communities.
Yep.
And I think a lot of that comes through fear of relevance. Like the police, particularly within the black community, are kind of losing their relevance. Like there's the whole movement of getting police out of our schools,
because
it obviously pushes a lot of kids into the prison pipeline earlier. There's like the whole movement with us not really wanting police in our areas because of how they treat us. Like, and if we're able to self-govern and ensure of the safety of our community, what purpose do they serve? And I think a lot of that stems from them trying to maintain their relevance, or perhaps overcompensate for the fact that they're not as relevant as they should be because they don't know how to engage.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about it, like, back in the day, you'd have an officer that was assigned to a particular area, and that officer should, like, if we look like stereotypically back in the day, should know a lot of the name faces, bait faces on that beat.
Yep.
So it'd be like a community name. That doesn't exist anymore. So you're getting all these officers who, because they don't have any strong links to the community and they're being put in these new areas, are coming in. And then rather than trying to integrate themselves, just criminalizing people and not having conversations. Like, could you name any of the officers who work any of the beats near where you live?
Never. No. I've been in Manchester 10 years and I've lived in and around the same places. Couldn't name.
It's just weird to me. Like,
and I couldn't approach either.
And that's the thing, because we know how it goes. Like, no matter whether you're you could be like a top barrister, every person of color, whenever they see a police officer walking up behind them, has that moment where they're like, shit, have I got anything on
me? Is this my call? Yeah.
Even though you know you don't,
even though
you've just got whatever you need on you for your day, you're still like, oh shit, am I going to be searched? Or there's that little fear, and it's because of the way that they've cemented themselves within the relationship between position, like groups of power, so like the police and people of color. It's really, really fascinating to me, because when we see how they interact with us within our community, how can we demand that these types of groups come in and protect our community when they criminalize us? How can we ask groups to come in our community and help us resolve our issues when they're one of the biggest contributors to the issues that we face?
Just
weird. And then when we turn to other facets of power, whether it'll be local leadership, not local in terms of organizations on the ground, but then like political local leadership, like how effective is that at resolving some of the issues that we face? And when we raise issues of policing, how is that dealt with? Like, I'm pretty sure we all know the answers to that. Obviously, I have to be careful what I say.
No, it's like, again, I very much, like, it feels like we're so young, yet we go, oh, we have to, this is a game of chess that we've fallen into. This game of chess wasn't completed by the generation before us who did all of the fighting, the people who literally had to physically defend themselves because other people wouldn't, for them to get through a day. Like, that generation, we expected, okay, that's enough, we don't need to play chess anymore. The generation before that, who fought a whole damn war and then were told, nah, you're not welcome here. Fight a whole war, it's like, nah, you sit and drink outside. Fought a whole war to go, okay, cool, thanks for that, go home, we don't want you around anymore. To think, like, okay, shit, where does our chess game begin, and where is our place currently in this chess? What is our move to make? We don't have to fight. Well, I say in inverted commas, we don't have to, but I know people who have had to. We don't have to physically defend ourselves from these situations anymore. There's an asterisk on that. We don't have to justify our place. Again, there's an asterisk on that. So all of these things which you go, all of that is so 80s, all of that is so 50s, all of that is so World War era, we go, oh wait, no, it's not. It's all they did was change the goalposts for us, change the move we have to play in this game of chess. So we still go through that. So like, when I posed that question, like, what does Black History Month mean to me? It's such a vague, it's probably more vague than I meant, because it was, for me, it was just the month of, like, the one day, because I do it every couple of weeks, where I go, stock check, where am I in this chess game? Who do I have to justify my last move to? Who do I have to justify my next move to? And who do I have to justify that, like, we're not just pawns in this. Like, in the best way possible, we're not going to be just moved around and shift around and used to tick boxes and all of these things where we see, it's like, oh, the police have had a effect, crime is down X, Y, Z percent in this area. They don't, I bet those facts don't take into account the organisations like Forever Family, who are out there, and they're, if it means physically deterring someone, if it means walking your child to school, haven't we seen that for the last few generations? Haven't we? From the glorious pictures of the first integration, the woman who is still alive today, and then we go, wait, it's 2020, and we still have to walk our kids to school because that's the safest thing we can do. We can't trust a system around us to protect us.
It's so crazy to me, and there's, like, so much you said there that I want to get into. It's like, firstly, the fighting has changed because it's not taking place on the streets, it's taking place in the workplace now.
Yeah.
Oh, that racism in Britain is different. Like, I was talking to one of my American friends about this. Like, racism in England and America has progressed, particularly in England. It's no longer overt, it's the microaggressions.
Yeah.
It's the not said to you, it's the stuff that's enacted, it's not spoken. Mm-hmm. So, like, whether that's going for a job, not receiving it, having the same amount of qualifications as another applicant, you asking for feedback, them unable to provide you any sort of feedback that's developmental, but then still being able to hire somebody else and not being able to explain why that decision's happened.
Yep.
Or being in the workplace and having somebody use racial slurs or stereotypes around you, and then you confronting that or wanting to confront that, but then having to stop and check yourself because you're feared of being stereotyped as some sort of aggressor or being the angry black guy or the angry black woman. Like, there's no kind of acknowledgement for the mental load of black trauma.
Yes, like, that's so true.
To be black is to be in Britain, is to be in a consistent state of questioning. You're always questioning yourself, questioning your surroundings, questioning how you're interacting with stuff. Like, you can walk into a room full of people, and every room I walk into, I'm always myself. But at the same time, in that room, when you walk into it, say if I walk into a college and the main kind of teaching body is white, there's still that little voice in your head that's like, I wonder how many of these people have stereotyped me. Even though they brought me to teach something that they can't teach, or they want me to teach in a different way, there's still going to be, oh, I wonder what stereotype exists there, or what their perspective is of there. And it's because of the way that society is. And then this is why we have a lot of young people who struggle, because, like, whilst our generation is in the point of engaging with it and kind of very much taking ownership and wanting to kind of make things better, the generation before us, theirs was a weird type where they were still maybe fighting a little bit, but then it wasn't so much in the workplace. And so because we have two kinds of generational gaps in the experience, there's a disconnect there. Like, I have it where I try to explain to my parents, who taught me loads of stuff, and they're the reason I am the person I am, about the kind of cerebral racism that we have to navigate in the workplace.
Yeah.
And I guess it's harder for them to contextualize because I guess they've experienced so much of the physical side that perhaps it either is something that they don't acknowledge because they're just kind of like, oh, I've fought my time, I'm just trying to get the retirement.
That's, yeah.
Do you know that
dumb ones? Yeah, it's that I definitely understand that because I have those conversations as well. And for me, I'm always, like, I'm really honest with it, with how recent that switch happened for me.
Yeah.
Like how very, very real that I almost remember the moment. And I tie that really closely to the moment I decided to start growing my locks. Because up to that point, like, I always think of, like, you're a child, my mum would take me to the barber's every 2 weeks, crop, skin fade, back sides, done, all of it low, no higher than a 2. And she used to tell me that, like, this isn't just so it looks, just because it looks good or it's the in haircut. She's like, this is a very functional tool that we have to play. Like, you play a game when you're doing all of these. We have to use this as a part of the game we play. So my mum is always, she's one of the generations, and I will always say this, my mum is always for, like, overdressing for an occasion. Because she's like, that's part of the game. She's like, if I walk into a room, I don't want how I look to be the first thing that they go negative mark. She wants to walk into a room and then they go, oh, as disgusting as it sounds out loud, the best reaction to get in those situations is, oh, that person's dressed well for a black person, because any other option is immediately lower than that. And that's insane that that's what we have to work towards. And there was a time in which that was still really overt, but now we still do it. So I started growing my hair and my mum sat me down and she was like, not as official as pulling out the dining room chair and sitting down, but she was like, what do you do if you need to go to work? Like, I'm fortunate enough to work from home forever, but there's times where she's like, what happens if you have to travel for work? Like, what happens if you need to go do something official with work? I was like, I have to be myself. And this is the most ultimate way I can be myself, because there's no hiding this. There's no getting a skin fade to have to go present myself in a way. This is me. And if I have to go into a room and I see those, because again, we're with the world enough to look in someone's face and go, oh, I see what they've done here. I see how this person has played me in this situation. So to have to play that, and I guess from the older generations, I know from my mum has taught me, she's like, it's a physical thing. It's like, she doesn't want us, like pluralizing my generation, to be like alienated from the room because of those things, because in their reality, that was what was happening. People were physically being alienated from the room. So she's like, yeah, you might be in the room, but all of those things take you a step back. So when you have to all sprint for that same job, when you all have to speak at an event, the first things they're going to look at is that person's hair, that person's, the way they're dressed, the way they're talking, their accent, their mannerisms, the tone of their voice. It's why so many black guys have to go through that phase if they grow up or in around those spaces where you have to go, wait, I need to stop automatically taking the bass out of my voice to make someone else feel comfortable. I remember having that thought. I remember being sat in a room and halfway through the day going to talk and I was like, my voice hurts. And it's like, yeah, because I've been subconsciously taking the bass out so everyone else feels comfortable. Because if one morning I walk in and I start talking like this, all hell might break loose.
That's the thing with it. Like, I think that one of the biggest issues with that is they're always having to make other people feel comfortable. It ties into what I was saying earlier about, like, questioning yourself when you've heard something racist or, like, when someone says something horrible at work. It's like you're always in a state of comforting, like, the person who's judging you. Like, if we think back to our parents, like, that example is really great that you said about, like, having to cut your hair and stuff like that. Like, before I locked up when I was younger, my godmother was like that and used to go on when my hair would be long and unruly.
Yep.
And wanted me to cut it. And she'd say the same things, like, oh, like, what about, like, your job and stuff like that? Or what about when you want to get a job? Or what about, like, what are your teachers going to say? And it's like that, because I guess the whole fear of not being able to get a job and not being able to do things, like, when I speak to my grandparents and they talk to me about what it was like when they came over from Jamaica and the types of jobs they had, like, they had to work so hard. And a big part of getting, like, some of the most difficult jobs was dressing well, whereas our generation, we kind of are in a position now where we understand that, you know, I need to be black and uncompromising. Like, I shouldn't have to compromise who I am to make you more comfortable in the space.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you're not compromising for me. Like, there are plenty of examples in which there could be mutual compromise, whether that's celebrating proper awareness days. Like, as we saw from the poll, that bit, not many places have even bothered about Black History Month.
Yeah.
But then we'll do stuff for, like, I don't know.
That World Avocado Day, it got a deep, dark laugh from me. Like, people celebrating Avocado Day, but silence on Black History Month.
It's mad. Like, even some of the places I've worked with before have celebrated, like, mad things like Movember and things like, because it's where it raises awareness for other things. But then it's like, we're so focused on these other days and seem to overlook these ones, because again, it's that issue of connection and relating.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but, and then if you pre that on a deeper level, it's like you can connect to every other issue in the world of kind of awareness days, but the one that kind of pertains to, I don't know, but someone,
it's the, like, it's civil people don't understand, like, what the term civil liberties mean. I've come to see a lot of people don't understand what that means and what the implications of it are.
It really disappointed me, like, seeing that at work and seeing like people just not really being bothered about Black History Month. Like when I've come into conversation, like on Instagram, we've seen so many people seeing that their organizations, like there's one person in particular I was speaking to who's white, who works in an accountancy firm. She had to go to her accountants, the lead accountants of her firm, and be like, look, we're completely out of touch, and had that conversation, and it started to impact change. But it's like, how many other Black voices, which is great, and she's done great things.
Yeah.
But then also, when you put it on a deeper level, I wonder how many Black voices have tried to flag that, just kind of disregarded. Or like other people have reached out and had to set things up at their workplaces. And it's like, how is any business still culturally relevant and operate in 2020, which seems to be a year of massive change, and then still fall into the biggest hurdle? Like, if we think about how many of these companies that people are working for did the whole Black Square thing, did the whole solidarity with America and George Floyd, and then you fall into the first hurdle, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it's in October. That was in June, and you've literally fallen at the very first hurdle. Like, what's so true.
My personal experience was, I've been very conscious, and I was always very conscious, that what a lot of people and organizations do in that situation is, because it's not overt, they think, again, it's redefining what, like, the internalized, or like the inverse or implicit racism looks like. It's the, sometimes it's the absence of anything. One thing I had to be really conscious of is people going, yeah, I feel for you, we definitely need to do something. And then the sentence would end there. And then they'll be like, cool, there's a big empty space that we want you brown people to fill with stuff. And then we'll be like, oh, look, we created a pool for people to jump into. So I was like, I was very conscious that I'm not going to just sit on that empty space or let people end the sentence there, because I don't want the emotional labor that comes with it. Because I still have my 9-to-5 to do. I still have a difficult ass job without going, cool, what's the emotional labor that I have to put on top of everything that I do now to be the conscious Black educator in this scenario? Because that, people are paid bags for that. I don't want to have to sit here and go, wait, they can't even be bothered to go, what do we put in this empty space that we've created here? They go, someone will do it. And if not, we at least say we created the space. We at least say, oh, solidarity, Black History Month is October. To some people that go, oh, there we go, space is created. There's the headline, brown people fill it. So, like, for me, I was really conscious that I'm not going to put myself, or I'm going to be very active about protecting the people around me who also do want to do something, but I don't want them to go, ta-da, look at me doing the dance in the pool for everyone, to justify people going, see, the space was there for a reason. So I was really conscious about what I did and, like, the way I presented what we presented. And then I was also very conscious about not putting myself in it, because I said, I don't want to. My emotional labor stops at helping create content. If someone else was there to do that, I would have happily intervened. But again, my job isn't there to lay the foundations of the pool and then fill it. And then to go, wait, none of that is my job. That's like, for me, that was a light bulb moment. And honestly, that's the point where I bowed out of everything. I submitted everything. And hilariously, I got no responses. I got no follow-up. I've had no follow-up, no responses since the moment I went, oh, everything's submitted, there it is. I got, cool, thanks, amazing. Nothing since that moment. That was mid-October that I submitted all of that. And for me, I was like, oh, cool, that's the reason I protected my mentals. I protected myself from that emotional labor.
If you think about the deeper level of thought you've had to have while undertaking such what should have been a simple process, if you're creating some resources and sending it out, that completely articulates the experience that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you've had to already manage your expectations because you already were able to predict the disappointment that you received. Also, the fact that you're in a space where you had to, again, it's this making space to make other people feel comfortable. It's like you had to go out and create all these resources so that some people at work who weren't that bothered, perhaps, could engage with it and then be like, oh, yeah, I feel good now. I'm kudos. I've read about George Floyd. I've read this. That's fine, you know. Black Lives Matter. And then carry on and probably still do the same microaggressions and stuff. Like, it's such a complicated issue, because to truly impact change, there'd need to be a complete dismantling of what is in place now, because the current structure isn't working. Like, there was another person I spoke to about accountancy today, who was saying that the firm that she works at is entirely white. Like, yep. The only people that are there that are people of colour, I think there's 5 or 6 people who are from Africa. So there are no black British people working within that particular firm, even though they offer a graduate scheme. So it's like, well, surely that's an indicator that in some way your scheme is failing, right? If you've got no diversity coming through on your graduate scheme, what does that tell you about the places in which you're advertising it?
That speaks so many, like volumes for stuff that people go, oh, the space is there, we've created this one thing, there's the empty pool, and then go in, nah, someone will fill it.
So many universities do it. Like, when you pre-universities that have done all these posts about diversity, they're like, oh, you know, we're committed to diversity and implicated change. And then you look where they market. None of these universities come to any of the colleges in Mossad and say, hey, you kids can come to get a degree here, and this can lead you on this path. This is what degrees get you. None of these kids go to North Manchester around some of the other schools and talk about all the colleges and talk about where a degree and where higher education gets you. The focus remains on these very certain, I won't say affluent, but obviously like middle class areas. The emphasis stays with areas in which they can see that parents can afford to send their kids there. But what's wrong with going into some of the more working class areas and chatting to some of the students who may need a bit more of a financial push to go to uni? Like, it's such a deeper issue when you think about it.
It's like, for me, what the month taught me a lot is I'm so glad that, one, we're of that generation where we stopped taking stuff. And like, we're privileged enough because of the generations before us that we're at a stage where we don't have to take stuff. Like, even just for me, going, like, making it really rudimentary, the fact that if we fight back, we're not going to be immediately criminalized. At least we've got that bit there. Like, that's what generations before us did. That if you were a black male of this age a few generations ago, if someone tried to fight you, you either take that beating, run, because if you stay and stand your ground, you might be killed, and that won't have any repercussions. Even if you're hurt, even if you finish toe-to-toe, you're both lumped up, you will serve the harsher punishment. So it's like that mentality is always of like the older generations, that, bro, get away from it. Leave. Parents are always like, don't put yourself in those situations. Grandparents, don't put yourself in those situations, because you won't come out a winner, even if you lump someone up in your own defense. And now our generation, now we're like, okay, we don't take that. And luckily, at least the foundation has been lifted a little bit. So if we reach that situation, we can confidently put it out that we were defending ourselves because of X, Y, and Z, which is horrible that we have to, but we can at least put that out. And then people go, ah, that's enough. It's not, you know, it's not as bad as that. And then go, it's just because the foundation lifted a couple of millimeters. That's all they did, lift the foundation a couple of millimetres. For a lot of people in a lot of society now, that's enough justification for the sky level of bullshit that still exists. They go, but that's when you get those excuses, but it's better now than it was. It's like, bruv, I wasn't alive when people were spitting on brown people walking in the street. I beg you, do that to me now and it won't end that way. But you still have enough power to speak to your parents across the table when they say something about Jay-Z appearing on TV, when Beyonce appears on TV and they throw a derogatory comment, when they complain about the new 007 being a black woman, to the point where, have you seen what's happened with that, by the way? Sorry to deviate.
No, like, I saw it earlier, I saw the announcement about it, so I need to check it back and obviously predict what's happened. People being pissed off, firstly, because she's black, secondly, because she's a female as well. Like, if we look at, like, what James Bond stands for, it's like, a stereotypical suave British male.
So misogynistic British male who uses privilege to get away with crimes, and that's a really negative way to spin it, but welcome to what we have to do.
That's literally what the epitome of it is, in being this smooth, suave guy, and it's like, well, no, he's not. Like, first, we can see that he's obviously got emotional issues. Secondly, we can see that he doesn't treat women in a respectful way. And how is this someone that we glorify and champion? It's like, why can't we change this and have a woman lead in this? Why can't we change it to have a black woman lead in this? Like,
so what has happened since then is obviously it was so predictable, but the actress herself removed herself from all social media to protect really? Herself from this repercussion at the exact point in the world where we should have been celebrating her and giving her those flowers. Because so many times, like today, I saw the news and instantly, I do what so many people do now around the world from a point of positivity, is when you see something like that, because we're so connected as fans and celebrities or whatever caveat, to be able to go to that person, even though you're one in 10 million, to be able to throw a couple of flower emojis and 100% in their comments on Instagram and to retweet their post about how happy they are. Go to do those things and you're like, wait, there's no way I can pass those flowers on, because before me, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people got so irate about their idea of this institution of a character and what this character, it's nuts that people are so angry because of what this character means. People are so irate about that, that they, like, someone has to protect themselves so much.
It ties so much into that trauma as well. Even at the level that that actor has risen to, they are not exempt from it. If this was, say, a white male actor, this would have been the biggest moment of their career. And the only difference is that this is a black female. And this arguably could be a defining moment of her career. She could decide that show business isn't for her, as we've seen many times with other musicians when they've gotten this type, other musicians or other actors, when they've gotten this type of response, it's kind of knocked them and they've not wanted to engage in that particular industry anymore. And I think we need to hold a mirror up to ourselves, really, and kind of ask, why does this happen? Why do we care about a fictional character more than we do of the value of an actual person? An actual human being is behind that character that you're so annoyed that they're being depicted yep. by someone different. An actual human being has had to delete their social media profile because you've been so disgusting online in the types of things that you say into her. Like, I think that social media becomes this, whilst it's been great in terms of the dialogues that we've been having, it also becomes this echo chamber where...
I say that so much.
This horrible, almost tribe mentality where someone says something negative, like you see it on publications all the time, like NME, if NME posts anything about like usually like a black grime artist mm-hmm. or anything to do with Cardi B, like the comments are so sexual and racist and just horrible. And you see the more that these people comment on them, the more that other people are encouraged to do the same. And it's just like, then it raises the deeper question of, well, if social media doesn't necessarily maintain the emphasis on being social, or if we want it to maintain the emphasis of being social, then it should be policed. Not by police, but obviously the social media companies need to
yep.
have a heavier kind of duty of looking after that. One of the collaborations that I've done recently is with a clothing company called Carla, a lingerie wear line that's made by the woman, Jessie, who runs it. And she was explaining to me that whenever she posts pictures of the lingerie stuff she designs, that gets flagged on Instagram and gets taken down. So how is it that go and comment abhorrent things about somebody having a new job role, and obviously it's going to be millions of people doing it, but one picture of someone in like underwear gets taken down?
The systems, we know the systems exist, but the way they're positioned is obviously by people who don't have, they definitely have awareness, because I now feel like we're in a world where everyone has awareness. It's how they action that awareness. Or sometimes the lack of action towards that awareness. If people can sit there and program a beautiful algorithm that you press post, a line flashes across the screen, your picture's available to the internet, and then another machine will scan what that picture is to decide whether something is appropriate or not. If they can do that, also in the exact same part of the internet, if I spell a word wrong, it will correct me and give me suggestions. Obviously, there is a system in which it will tell someone that that word you've typed is not appropriate. Like, it's nuts to go, I, with zero internet knowledge, with zero technological knowledge, can go A and B, then lead to C.
It's weird to me as well, because I've experienced this firsthand. Like, the Escape the Kingdom video was removed 3 times by Facebook.
Wow.
That algorithm... It, like, the people who program the algorithm have their own biases, though.
Yes.
Like, in the opening scene, I burned sage. It flagged the sage as cannabis.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Even though there was no mouth. And like, it was so deep, bro. I had to go and argue with Facebook. It took me a week to get them to put my video up.
That's ridiculous.
I had to fight against the stupid automated responses you get to then speak to it. I said they didn't have the power, so they had to put me to their manager, who also didn't have the power. Then they had to put me to their area manager, who personally reviewed the video, and then was like, yeah, we don't understand why this is being flagged. We think it's because it's been flagged because it looks suspiciously like cannabis. And I was like, well, usually with cannabis, you'd put it to your mouth and smoke it. Like, who's got ounces of weed to just burn and smoke? And that, for me, was the first time that the bias of the algorithms themselves were really flagged to me. We can see that this actually happens, like in the example I've given you with Carla, the company I'm collaborating with, but also like my own experience. Like, why would you stereotype that video as cannabis? Why is it, if the algorithm is as smart as we say, and this scandal of my other previous post, they would know that that's out of character for the content that I post. Like, how intuitive is this algorithm?
Yeah, it's frustrating because, again, these are the exact scopes and the exact worlds in which we've got the ability to change, again, stuff that we can change instantly. The people who are already in those positions of power can change that. And then you go, okay, if they're not doing it, what's the pipeline to get there? And then you go and sit in these rooms where people are programming these things. And to see, like, to sit in a room of programmers, it's sometimes painfully apparent why those things exist. And some of the conversations I've seen and I've been a fly on the wall of has been, like, so close to that to go, oh, of course that's why this stupid shit occurs. And we have to raise it. We have to go, I'm not fucking smiling in the picture. Like, we have to raise those things because someone is so protected in this bubble where they're paid enough, they're secure in their job, they don't interact with anyone who's paid any less than them because that's the bubble that they live in, and therefore everyone's shaking each other's hand figuratively.
Like, of course algorithms cannot be exempt from bias. Like, I remember someone telling me, I don't know how, I don't have the stats on this, the information about it really, but I'm going to say it anyway. Someone was explaining to me, I trust them because they work in IT, but they were explaining to me that one of the biggest issues with driverless cars is that they struggle to program them free of bias. So obviously, yes, if a car is driving down the road, it knows that it's going to have to perhaps do a sharp turn, and there are two people it can hit. It's having to differentiate between who it can hit, because algorithms have to be black and white. There is no room for emotion, or decisions are just trying to, I don't know, there's only going to be two options in, because it works on a logical basis. So it's obviously going to have like inherent biases, and I could go on about this stuff all day. Like, it's mad.
What go on, sorry.
We'd have to then analyze the demographic makeup of those people who are working in those places or in those environments to make these rules. How many black people really work in that world? Who are on these teams that are making these decisions?
Yes.
How many people of color are members of Facebook at the high level where they can make these decisions over the algorithms? Because I'm pretty sure there was a video on Facebook, which is joked, where Mark Zuckerberg was getting grilled about all of the wrong stuff he's doing on Facebook. And they asked him how many people of color he's got in his execs. He couldn't answer.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Women he's had in his execs, couldn't answer. So we know there's an inherent lack of diversity at the top of these companies.
Yeah.
So this is one of the contributing factors to why things are the way they are.
Yeah, for me, the one thing from all of that is so many people are quick to dismiss this conversation, like that, especially that last end of conversation we've just had there, to go, oh, that's all conspiracy talk, that's internet, that's Reddit fodder. They dismiss it so much because they've never had to witness it. Most of my friends who have travelled with me have walked through the scan yourself barrier where you put your passport in the machine, you look up at the camera, the door opens and you dip. Every time I go to the airport with my friends, I have to explain, like, yo, I can't use that machine. You go and wait for me, see you on the other side. And then they go, why? Your passport has a chip. And I've had people in the queues, like the security at the airport, go use a self-scan. And I've said no, because it doesn't work. And like, well, why? What's wrong with your passport? Is the first question I usually have to answer. And then sometimes they've made me go to the machine. And if I don't do it, I'm the one who's causing an issue. They've got go to the machine, it's queue time. And then I stand in the machine, put the thing in, and then it says it can't see my face. And then my friends have been on the other side and gone, this is the reality of the people who sit there and make all of this technology without thinking of any other others, in inverted commas. And like a lot of my friends have probably listened to this conversation a million times with me. And then that moment in an airport where all it's supposed to be is about fun, that moment you scan through the airport and you're like, yo, I'm at the destination now. I'm through the airport, I'm through the beef. And they had to see me doing the scan thing, pull a guy over and be like, this is the reason I was still in that queue. Now, do I have to go back to that queue or is someone else going to do this? Some airports have been so embarrassed in that moment trying to explain it that they've just pressed the button and opened the door and just let me through. So it's nuts that that world is so protected that they literally broke travel rules and regulations just to appease the system and not go, there's probably a way that we need to fix this because that brown man isn't only going to travel one time in his life.
Well, that's the thing, like, we have this mentality of we're all just cogs in the system. Then if one cog doesn't work in the system or do its job, then the system fails. And until we really unpack and understand that we each have a responsibility to take to make sure that things are as equal as they can be and make sure that the world is as equal as it can be, we're going to keep having these issues. Like, why has no one in the airport ever gone to their manager and said, look, this is a serious issue about this passport thing? Why has nobody ever gone and had a conversation who works in Facebook and said, hey, this algorithm is an issue? Because, you know, we've got people like Tommy Robinson posting content freely, but then, you know, as soon as a black Rastafarian guy puts up a video of him burning sage, we're seeing it's cannabis. Like, why is no one escalating these problems? And again, I guess it comes down to that connectivity. If you can empathize with an issue and you can really connect to an issue, then you're going to want to inform change around it. Yep. But a lot of people, I guess, well, not a lot of people, because I can't say that because I'm generalizing, but some people would, because like that issue of, oh, it doesn't affect me, innit? So why should I care? Like, George Floyd got killed in America. I live in Mostyn. Why should I care? You know them ones.
Yeah.
It's just all a bit difficult. But bro, I'd love to continue chopping it up.
We will.
Really under pressure.
Yeah.
Of myself.
Now, to be very clear for when this is posted, is it's unedited, apart from the bit where I accidentally closed the Zoom call, if anyone was still there. It's unedited because these are the conversations that we have. It's a mandatory, not mandatory, it's an expected thing because it's our experiences. We have to have these conversations. Our conversations don't end at the football. It doesn't end at the Premier League. It doesn't end at, oh, work was tough today. It doesn't end at our interests. Like, our conversations have all of those things, and then this below the sea level, like, this is all the below the sea level stuff, which is the stuff we have to, this is the bread and butter sometimes of our days. As sad as it is, sometimes this is the vegetable we have to eat. So it's, we have to have these conversations, because even if one other person presses play on this and goes, shit, I sit around these people at work and I don't ask about it, or I've seen these issues and I've gone, ah, that's a one-time thing, or I sit around the table with my parents or my friends who are in privileged positions in which one sentence can act change or even change someone's career path, I am now aware of how to do that or what position I play in the game. I'm aware of what cogs I spin in this. So for me, that's the one thing. It's gone, touch wood, gone are the days that us young black males are just looked at as tools to annoy white parents. Gone are those days. We want the conversation to be more than that at the dining table now.
Definitely. I want to ensure that we're doing that. And I think that I could give you better answers when I'm not under pressure.
We'll chop it up. We'll definitely chop it up.
But it was good. It was good to have this kind of preliminary meeting so we can really see what we're going to talk about. Because now I know, obviously, a bit more of the direction we're going. I can make sure that some of the things that I've talked about, like the AI thing, have clearly researched.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to put any misinformation out there.
Oh, I want that to... We're going to have a whole chat about that.
Because that's a massive thing that we need to get into. But I appreciate you,
Tom. I always appreciate you, too.
Let's chop it up. Safe, bro.
Thank you very much. Peace.